song title again?
Anda de lo lebi ele du mare.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Tick, tick, tick. Welcome back. Dixon Jane's podcast number 402. God, that's a lot of fuckings to get to 500. Yeah, it's a Saturday morning. Well, noon. I put a dollar into the parking lot meter. Here at Bluffers Park, they tend to enforce it during the summer, and you gotta pay for parking down here on the beach anyway. And I didn't think it was worth taking a chance. Didn't want to spend more than a dollar for this damn podcast. So that's what we got. And I've been listening to my iPod and didn't want to listen to podcasts. So set the songs to random and got a great, great, great chapter from On the Road. And here we are. I decided I'm going to tell you about Vancouver. My time in Vancouver. Because I mentioned that the last podcast and said it seems to be one part of the podcast I don't really talk about. But then I don't talk about much of the past, even though I should be. So here we go, and we'll see where my memory banks take me. Because you know the method of doing Dixon Jane's is just, bam, fire up this talk button as soon as possible without any pre-thinking. And already I've done a little pre-thinking about leaving Montreal in the fall of 72. I had to stick around for the summer. I had a great job, of course, with the CN Railway working points in Charles Yards, which I loved. Got me through university. Paid for my trip to Europe. And those were fantastic jobs. Heading off from Lachine, grabbing the local buses early in the morning and doing, working in the lumber yard. All that's closed down. You know, it's just a piece of history from the past. The Point St. Charles yards, they're gone. You see, I'd like to stay there. I don't want to go to Vancouver yet. My mind is just recalling, dredging up memories from La Pointe. Oh, it was so rich with the Irish, the French, the Italians, and the characters down there, and just how it changed over the summers from starting there. First CN job was 67, headquarters office Montreal, junior clerk. Then 68, teletype attendant. In the summer, just tightening up the rolls of this fine, this printed paper that had dots and dashes, teletype. We're talking pre-digital here, you know, and you had to race around to make sure these spools didn't overflow and run off the rims, and you had to take off one and put on a new thing of tape, and then you had to take the messages that were sent and route them. And your job, you sat at a desk with these tubes, these vacuum tubes that sort of sucked messages up through the building. And you had to know, okay, where does this one get routed to? I don't know how it worked. You were just a cog in the machine, but it was so cool. You put a message in a little canister, put it in this tube, and this thing gets sucked up to some other destination, comes out at somebody else's desk. You know, it was a mystery. I never saw the people who actually delivered these things. It was so cool, and you had to know, okay, where did each one go? Which tube did you stick it in? Where did you route it? Man, that was neat. And this is just an old building off, goddamn, just maybe down Peel Street, off La Gauchetière or somewhere, I don't know. Again, that's another building that's probably long since demolished. That whole technology is long since passed, but it was neat to be a part of that. And sometimes you just didn't know, and you'd fake it. You'd send it up in a tube, and sure enough, it'd come back to you at some point during the course of the night. Great thing about that was a midnight shift, too, midnight to 8. And then the next summer, they put me in 69, I guess. They put me in, is that possible? La Pointe. Yeah, Pointe St. Charles Yards. Oh, boy. Anyway, I managed to get myself through university. I was one credit short. I took a course on religion, science, and philosophy in my second year. Oh, this sounds good. And, you know, realized the guy who was teaching was really serious. And I was thinking this might be a bird course, a little bit of everything, religion, science, philosophy. Oh, sure. But you actually had to read the books and write papers. And I remember, bam, being stung, that first paper I wrote, the guy just wrote big letters right across the paper, a very lazy bit of work. And he was so right on. I can't say I'm grateful to him, but I sure was impressed with his bullshit detector. And so I think I just dropped that course, figured, fuck, there's no way I'm going to pass this. This guy expects me to actually do work and research and think. I'm really sorry now, of course, because I'd ace the course now. I'd love it. But the texts are really, really hard going, heavy slog, and it was not a bird course. So I was always short one course, and my last summer I had to get my BA. I had to pick up one more credit, and I chose the, I don't know what, history of art, probably. Yeah, I think that's what it was called. And that pissed me off, too, because it was just plain memory, you know. Okay, what's the difference in Ionic, Corinthian, and the various Greek columns and shit like that? I managed to pass with a C. It spoiled my record because, you know, previous year I had got academic honors and this bloody summer credit while I was working, saving money, still had to make up for this crap course. Anyway, got it, and then in the fall it was time, okay, time to leave home, time to grow up, time to have a new beginning. I'm going to Vancouver. And by then I'd already met the fellow I now call Barnacle Bill, and we had all become buddies, the old ex-Lachine High group, and formed a pretty tight crowd around Reginald's water pipe down his basement off in 55th Avenue, right on the borderline between Lachine and Dorval. That was our hanging out place. You'd tap on the basement window, and you climbed in the basement windows. That's how you visited your friends. You didn't want to wake any parents up. Maybe 1 in the morning, you feel like a toke. You'd tap on the glass and climb into the basement. And, hey, got some fresh hash, you know, let's try this out. Oh, it was beautiful. And Reginald would just play music. He'd just put on the albums, and he just knew that was his thing. He would just choose song after song to go with each thing, and you're just thinking, holy fuck. And he turned me on. He's the guy who turned me on to Pink Floyd and so much else. Still good friends with him. He's at West. He was a rock keeper. He took the rock all the way through, I guess, I don't know, Egypt and so on. So the rock, yeah, it's still out in Vancouver. Did we have the rock by then? No, we didn't have the rock at that point. But we had the friendship. We had the connection. The tribe had formed, the Lachine tribe. And the Lachine tribe is migrating to Vancouver. And Reginald came back with his cute sister, who we all wanted to join us for tokes down in the basement. And she looked like a little hippie girl. Very cute, blonde, lovely. And we all had our eyes on Reginald's younger sister, and I ended up, well, living with her out in Vancouver. That sort of happened in the course of the journey out there on the train, although I guess the groundwork was laid before then. We just clicked. We just had fun. I was in the middle of changing girlfriends, I guess you'd call it. I had one, whew, boy, glad none of these people listen to this podcast, but somebody I dated for quite a while, but it was time for change, and suddenly this young lady represented something new and exciting and different and beautiful and fun and crazy and mad. Oh, wow. It was a real summer of freedom, I guess. It would have been the summer of 72. It was nuts. Anyway, by the fall, I had bought the train ticket, packed all my university books for some crazy reason into a big blue steamer trunk, which I bought probably in the east end of Montreal, and was going to ship everything out to Vancouver. And that we did. Got on that train. And by then, Reginald had come. He had already been out there and come back and was coming back to bring his sister with him. So the three of us ended up in the train. I was the only one who had the money for a little compartment, at least as far as Winnipeg. And we left, and my father saw us off, waved to us from Dorval Station. He knew the train was stopping there, and I told him, he gave me a big 40-pounder of Bacardi for the trip. Damn, that was fine. That was one of the finer moments with my dad. Like, he was there. He was on the platform. He saw the train, and he had come to meet us. And that 40-pounder, we claim to this day, and I think it's true, that we had finished it before we left the island of Montreal. That's not far from Dorval, I'll tell you. Anyway, we had a fabulous trip out there and arrived in Vancouver, had a place to stay, and then things just got crazy and wild. And the place we had to stay, by this point, it was this young lady and myself, Reginald's sister, got thrown out in the middle of the night. It was a crazy, insane scene, but it bordered on, you know, there could have been, somebody could have been hurt. And it was time to get out. I believe there was a tire iron involved. And it involved ringing doorbells to say, hey, we need a place to sleep. And having the wrong apartment building. All this was on the north shore of Vancouver. We had the right apartment number, the wrong apartment building. Some of them looked quite similar. Along West 3rd, I guess, or East 3rd. Lonsdale was a dividing line. Most of my life, most of my Vancouver memories are North Vancouver. And that still has a soft spot in my heart today. And when I go back, of course, I always visit, take the sea bus across, and walk up and down. Last trip I did, we were talking about Frankie's, a little Japanese-run restaurant. Just a little, like a dinette-type thing. It was just off Lower Lonsdale that served all the dockyards that were still active then. And I knew enough to, wow, you come in there for your tonketsu and your real Japanese working man dishes. Like, it wasn't, we're not talking upscale fancy Japanese sushi. We're talking about working man stuff. But some guy called Frankie, he just opened this kitchen. It was a great, great find long before Japanese food became trendy. Anyway, ended up staying with Barnacle Bill and his girlfriend, who happened to be his best friend's ex-wife, or his ex-best friend's wife, might be a better way to put it. They had hatched a plan she had just been married. Gorgeous woman, knockout, the kind of thing you'd see on TV. And I guess she'd realized after she married the guy, she picked the wrong one. That should have been Barnacle Bill. So she just flew off to Calgary, and Barnacle Bill raced his car across the country. I was there in Lachine when he loaded it up for the trip. He had traded in his Humber, or sold his Humber. He had a Humber. Crazy car. The back seat was removable. I've already told you the story probably, how they went to some drive-in. I don't know if it was a Harvey's or whatever they had. Maybe, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't a drive-in. It was a takeout only. They lifted out the back seat of the car and carried it into the restaurant and sat down. No shit, that's the kind of stuff we did. That was in Montreal before we even hit Vancouver. And oh, it was mad. Anyway, he bought himself from Spinelli's down in Lachine off 6th Avenue a 72 Toyota, brand new little Toyota, which was called the Japanese Suite, because one or more of us often ended up sleeping in that car. That was the car that took us around the Yukon, over the top of the World Highway, and served him very well for many, many years, till he got his Mazda, which he still has, but it's on its last legs. Oh, boy. So what happened? Yeah, anyway, moved in. We had to move in with him temporarily, and it was insane by then, and it just involved a lot of drinking, a lot of smoking, a lot of crazy stuff. Well, eventually, this young lady and I moved into place on West Keith Road, which was around 7th Avenue, just off Lonsdale. Beautiful place. And These were really nice high rises you could actually rent, and somehow we'd scrape together. I was the only guy who had money, and you'd scrape together, you'd pay your month's rent, and you'd be able to go up on the roof and look out over the city of Vancouver across the harbor. And I guess the sea bus was new or just coming in, or even was it even in then? I don't know. It was just wonderful being on the North Shore and having that gorgeous view and watching the ships come in. And that's what you'd do from West Third. You'd sort of look at these things sailing in from the Orient, you know, the Maru, Nippon Maru, and all these other ships. There was just something so romantic about ships and harbors and Vancouver at night. You'd cross over to Gastown, get drunk, and find your way back if you could. I was going to tell you about all the jobs I had, because I've had a lot of jobs, and I don't recall them. I know I worked for the Liquor Commission part-time. I know I got a job in the Driver's Bureau where Reginald worked his entire working life. I guess the one job that really stands out was Total Plan, which was a guy, sort of a hobby business. He was an office designer, and he had a moving company as part of it. And I was just there, hired on as a mover. Got the job through, your day jobs, and they just secretly, in the end, hired me on. They weren't supposed to, but when they realized that most of the other people they were getting for day shifts weren't very reliable, and I was, they said, hey, we'll take you on. So that I was installing all those new, the Bentel Center, all the new buildings in Vancouver back in the early 70s. I moved in a hell of a lot of the office furniture. And I guess it was around that time, after, from that very same place, the apartment on Keith Row, where I had my moment. And I swear, I mean, it sounds like the stuff of, a made-up story. It would fit well in a novel, but the night I took some drugs and whatever it was, I didn't have a very nice time. And I really had this image. I remember I related it to that same young lady at the time. Like, look, if I just... This knife represents the physical universe, this switchblade I have. And my heart represents a spirit, and I can unite them. And I would be bringing together, making one, the spirit and the physical world. They would unite by this thing plunging into my chest. Something along that line that kind of made an eerie sense at the time. And she was just wise enough to know, look, I've had one boyfriend go insane on LSD already and tried to kill his mother because she was the devil. It's not going to happen to another one. You need help, buddy. That ain't healthy. And I don't think I've ever thanked her enough for getting me to that point. There was more to it. I mean, I know it was related to my what do you call it? I was going to say incontinence. It's not incontinence. You can't get your pecker up. What do you call that? You take one of these pills and it stays up for hours. Fortunately, I mean, that's all a scam. You don't need pills to get your pecker up. You just need self-confidence, and that's what I needed. And I needed to speak. I needed professional help. It's so funny. I just can't think of the word. God, maybe that's not funny, but erectile dysfunction, that's what they call it now. I had a case of that. It just boiled down to I didn't have my driver's license. I just didn't know who I was or where I was going, and I didn't know who I was as a man, and I needed to learn that. And that's why I ended up going for help at University of British Columbia, because I didn't have any money, and they had a psychiatric department, and they're the ones who turned me over to group therapy, and group therapy was the thing that changed my life for good. So I think that's maybe a good place to end on, that little... window into Vancouver. God damn, they were good days, they were crazy days, they were sure as hell days of freedom. Some joy, some misery, some depression, there were times that, holy fuck, I'm just going to end up a bum. And but of course that was never going to happen. I was destined to have the life I have now, although honestly at the time, wasn't so sure where it was going. But there you have it. So thanks for listening, Dixon Jane's podcast. I'm back. Holy fuck, am I back. And I thank you for letting me share that with you. Now I gotta go. I think I only put in, got 3 minutes to get back to my car before that ticket expires. So, boys and girls, hey, let's have fun together, okay? Stay tuned. Bye for now.
Love that insane.
Yeah, that's the sound of rain on the car. Ooh, we got lightning and thunder. This is not a planned segment, but I'd left the roof, you know, the moon roof open a little bit, and I saw, holy shit, here comes the rain. Ran out to the car, got here, and then realized, hey, while I'm here with rain pouring down, why don't I talk to the Dixon James listeners? Because there's been a few things on my mind that I just want to get rid of. I'm in my driveway, by the way. Mike Duffy, if you're Canadian, you've been following the senators getting audited and finding out they're already getting paid a pile of money. And I've probably gone on about this in the podcast. I don't want to waste time on it. But I'm just so disgusted that these people who have been given privileges, so many, and have the honor of serving in the Senate, which used to be a noble cause, would just cheat nickel and dime and just try and get extra money, lie about where they're living, and all the shit that's going with it. And I wish this would be enough to really, really bring down Harper. Just give him the kick in the balls that he needs to say, fuck you and your pledges of honesty and integrity and everything else. I don't see it, buddy. You're playing the same dirty political games. And it isn't to say the Liberals or anybody else are cleaner. Well, the Greens probably are clean. It's just disgusting. The other topic, now that we're on politics, because you know Dixon Jane's podcast often gets into politics, mainly because my opinions are worth something, all right? That's what I'm telling you. I may have offended a few people by saying that anybody who contributed money to Gawker for the $200,000 they wanted to raise to buy the video purportedly showing our Mayor Ford, smoking crack and making racial slurs. I called an idiotic asshole, something like that. I stand by my opinion. It was a stupid thing. You should have thought it through. You should have realized you don't pay some other party money to give to some other people who are criminals anyway, who filmed the mayor doing crack. It's probably true. A couple of reporters have staked their reputation on it. It's not that I'm defending Ford, although I often do rise to his defense because he was voted in democratically, and you can't just pick on him because he's fat and he wants Subways. But, you know, everybody says, oh, downtown would never vote for him, not the people in the condos, not the hipsters. It's only the fucking suburbs who voted him in, people like us in Scarborough. I've defended him on a number of occasions, especially because, I mean, the left are out to get him. I hate this guy. Put on the lawyers. Just do everything you can to bring this guy down. Now, the business of him smoking crack, not a smart move if you want to be in public life. The comments he is said to have made, not very smart. Kind of thing you do maybe when you're high or drunk or stoned, whatever. But the idea that you're going to pay, raise money, okay, this is a public offering, you know, guys, send in your $5 and $10, and when we get $200,000, we're going to buy it. And the guys who filmed it, like, they need it to get out, set up shop in another city because, man, this guy's got some dangerous allies and this is for their life. Fuck you. This is a scam. They're selling that to the highest bidder. They just want money. And I cannot believe that people, educated, supposedly well-informed people, would put money into this and think it's a noble cause. Yeah, we're going to buy some honesty here and expose our mayor. Where is the integrity? That just really bothers me way more than him smoking crack. It just drives me nuts. And I think this is what's a little bit scary about the internet. There's this sort of a popular choice kind of thing. Yeah, let's all rally behind this. Yeah, let's all like this. Yeah, let's all vote for this. Yeah, let's all support this. And people don't go into the issues and so on. And I'm sure if you put it to a vote, for the next time somebody's caught kidnapping a child or you know, doing something horrific, you put it to a vote, let's bring back a public execution, yeah. And let's make it something ugly, like the electric chair. Yeah, they deserve it. And you would have people screaming in favor of brutal punishments. And again, yeah, what's that make me? Defend the child rapist? No. But I'm not in favor of the death penalty. I want to keep these people under observation. Find out, do whatever tests are necessary to find out why they are the way they are. Like, they did an interesting study on psychopaths and found out, wow, when they actually did do some scans and look at the brain while these people were watching pictures of people getting their hands slammed in a car door, they didn't feel any empathy. A whole part of their brain wasn't firing. It just wasn't there. It's like, hey, it's not to say it's not their fault. Well, yeah, it kind of is to say it's not really their fault. People are hardwired different ways. You know, we can't all be nice. But what I'm saying is further study for the people who are doing stupid and bad and evil and nasty things, you know? Don't kill the mass murderers. Don't kill, out of revenge, the psychopaths. Keep them alive and find out what happens, you know? Why are they doing what they're doing? Okay, I guess that's enough of a rant. It's just that I was out here and I realized, holy shit, the recorder, you don't need an explanation of why I'm doing it, and I don't need to justify anything either. I just wanted to get that out of my system because that's the kind of thing I do here on the Dixon Jane's podcast. I give my opinions, and my opinions are fucking worthy opinions. Worthy of your respect. And I, of course, welcome you to challenge me. Some people do. Not everybody agrees with everything I say. But, you know, there you go. So that's it. That's all you get. Rain is calming down. Gonna go back in and finish off the rest of this Victoria Day. Oh, yeah, all right, Victoria Day. Let's make it, Margaret Atwood, thank you, Victoria Day, Victoria and Aboriginal People's Day. Or Native Indians Day. No, I don't think they called it that. But, yeah, let's give it another title. Okay, let's remember the Aboriginal people, too. But we'll keep the Victoria Day part. Like, what? This is ridiculous. Jesus Christ, what a nutty idea. Are you serious? I don't mind changing the whole holiday. Get rid of the Victoria Day and come up with some other holiday if you like. That doesn't bother me so much. Although I just like the sound of the word Victoria. It's everywhere. And holy shit, Queen Victoria. Don't tell me she didn't have a lot to do with Canada and its early history. She did. The British Empire did. But that's for another time, I guess, okay? Just one more thing of people wanting to make it a better world in their own very special way. And some of those ways are strange and unusual and unworthy of my support. Thank you. Bye for now.
So you're watching from the stairs, yeah, everyone that ever cared. Oh, Lordy!
Yeah. I gotta tell you, I'm a little annoyed with myself. Sitting in my car here in Bluffers Park, I don't know, after school, after lunch, I need a nap. And I know I've got a comfy bed I could just go up and lie down on and really have a real nap, you know? Maybe even take my pants off kind of nap. But no, I get in my car and I drive to Bluffers Park and I'm just going to tilt the seats back, open all the windows and doze off in the car. And it's one of those crazy naps where you're not really sleeping. You just wake yourself up with a... you know, but I got to do it. I just need to get out, to get away, to get here. And of course, one of the reasons for coming here, as always, is to talk to you. And I work through that. Like, I go, man, do you have to do that? Like, why don't you talk to me from your backyard? Like, I looked out on my deck and it was sunny and I got a really good chair out there. And I thought, I could just sit on my deck. But no, I got to come here. So, here we are. And the other thing is, I 3 o'clock came, okay? I look, when I see the digits line up, when I see the 300 or 200 or whatever, it's news time. I gotta hear the news. And I'm trying so hard to break that habit. And it's just this conditioning, you know? Somebody observing could predict, oh, watch, he's gonna turn on the radio now. I was listening to Definitely Not the Opera. It was really enjoyable. It was out, people just coming out and transgendered people. And it was a very, very interesting show. And then I said, okay, I'll talk to you. And then it was 3. And I thought, well, first I'll just listen to the news. Because you know how sometimes I include clips. All this fucking newscast went on for 9 minutes. And I heard all this shit I already know, every single bit of it, about Harper and his lying politicians and his denial of any wrongdoing. Oh, we'll get the bad guys. They have no place here. And of the mayor, you know, refusing to comment on the coke charges. And just the same shit. And I sucked away. I pissed away. 10 minutes of my life listening. Not only listening, but recording. I thought, well, you know, I'll do one of those clever things. I'll record and then I'll sort of come in at one point. Well, I just kept listening, hoping the fucking thing would end, and it didn't. And now I'm telling you, but there's so many habits that I need to break and improve on. Today I took a newspaper from the slot. I'm trying not to take any. We were asked during class today, I want you to imagine you're angry. Think, close your eyes. Think of something that makes you angry, and then I want you to identify where you feel it. And she drew a diagram, and she went around the room, and everybody had to talk about where I felt the anger. Well, I thought about what is it that makes me angry, and for me, it's the car bombs that go off in markets, so that women and children and the helpless are, you know, the poor people who work in markets, and this is in fucking Afghanistan and in Syria and Iraq, just the innocents, the ones who haven't done it, they don't have a fucking chance in life. And it breaks my heart, but it bothers me. Like, okay, Oklahoma got wiped out by a tornado. Oklahoma City, south of, you know, a suburb, just completely devastated. Terribly sad. Like, whoosh, wiped off the face of the earth, you know, 20 children gone, dead. You know, maybe 100 total injured, maybe more, I don't know. But just, wow. And everybody's saying, well, they know that's going to happen. That's the center. That's where the warm air and the cold air collide, and you get these tornadoes every year. And wow, just there's devastation, like unbelievable 300-kilometer-per-hour winds. But you don't feel the same. You feel, that's tragic, but it's nature, but it's not man-made, unless you want to argue about we're screwing up the weather. It just happens, and it's sad and tragic, but it's not the same as somebody who plants a car bomb knowing he's going to blow the limbs off children and ladies. And, you know, it's not like a war when soldiers dig in and fight against each other. And I'm not saying that's noble or that anybody wants that either, but it's just not fair when it's civilians. And anyway, what makes you angry? And I couldn't identify. I couldn't feel any of the angers. And so I said, well, usually I feel it in my chest, or
I express my anger verbally, and I was thinking in this podcast, when I'm angry, I just rant and let it out, and I'm glad I do that. It's healthy to do that. But, you know, her diagram was all over the board. Everybody feels anger in different places, and it just can contort your face and tense your muscles and feeling your shoulders, your neck, your back, your chest, your heart, your teeth. You know, it's just everywhere. Oh. So what's the link? The link is we've got to reflect on the class, and I go back home and I write up my journal, my online journal, which I'm enjoying the classes. I've only got 3 more classes left for this particular credit. And I started thinking about the group therapy that I went through, because there's a lot of younger people in the class going through issues now, still working it through. And I had the benefit at the age of 24, I guess. 25, I don't know, maybe 74. 26, maybe? I don't know. Yeah, it could have been 26, maybe. Of going through group therapy. And I never forgot the doctor's name, because he was the organizer. He'd only come in once, you know, maybe once a week, and he'd do a session, but he was a bit distant. But you liked him. He was kind, heavy European accent. And the people who worked with us every day was there was a nurse who was quite attractive. There was a psychologist. I can picture her also. And then just a guy, Angela, who just helped us with the gardening and all the other crap we had to do. And he was just a normal guy. He was very accepting. The team were perfect for the group of us. And I guess there must have been at least 20 in the group. But it was what was amazing, and I've told him this many times, but each time I give you a slightly different twist or take or piece of information. This was very much based on the works of Carl Rogers and his client-centered therapy. But I've never forgotten his name. It was Dr. Knobloch. Dr. Knobloch. K-N-O-B-L-O-C-H. So while I was sitting here in Bluffers, I thought, I'm going to Google that, and sure enough, not a whole lot of information. He's still a professor at the UBC's 94, but yeah, it'd be 94, 95 years old. And I did find in Slovenia, and they're going to have a special. The 7th European Integrative Psychotherapy Conference will be held in Slovenia on the 11th of December or October. I don't know. The AGM will be on Friday. All right, anyway, there's a special feature, a tribute to Dr. Ferdinand Knobloch, pioneer of integrative psychotherapy. And I think that's wonderful. Like, this guy who basically healed me, changed my life. And it's odd that from a 26-year-old now to a 65-year-old, something almost 40 years ago, I've never forgotten, I've never let go of entirely, but I don't think I've ever done anything with it. I've had a better life because of it. I think because of that confidence that I was able to get from going through that group and that understanding of human nature, I was able to go to Japan, I was able to go to Africa, I was able to do the things I did afterwards. God damn, wait a minute, yeah. 74 would have been the year. So it's wonderful to see this and to see that this guy really was a pioneer. Ferdo, as he's nicknamed, is a pioneer of family therapy and therapeutic community in Europe, and created his theory of integrated psychotherapy, incorporating group schema, psychogymnastics, and drawing from, and other influences, psychodrama and the use of guided aberration. Yeah, we had to act out plays. That's right. Together with his wife, Jirina, he developed a network of treatment centers for integrated psychotherapy and became the focus of their book, Integrated Psychotherapy, published in five languages between 79 and 99. So what? He was a pioneer, and I got to be one of his patients. Because I went looking for a free psychiatrist, and they said, I think you should maybe join this program. His interest in small groups and therapy community grew out of his personal tragedy. He was a political prisoner during the Second World War. He and his first wife, Zuzana, who was Jewish, were separated and incarcerated in concentration camps by the Nazis. Sadly, Zuzana died in her camp. Ferdl survived and subsequently transformed his experiences to the benefit of others. It's quite something. I'd recall that, and then I guess as a result of the course that I'm taking now on counseling, I keep going back to this route. Like, even before the course, if you'll remember, which of course you won't, but I grabbed hold of my copy of the Carl Rogers on Becoming a Person and said, there's something to this. There's a connection here. And I'm just wondering, oh, God, this is where life gets difficult. There's a part of me that's wanting to stretch, wanting to dream, wanting to expand, wanting to actually do something, wanting to help somebody through the knowledge I've gained, actually wanting to make somebody feel better. Really want to do it. And there's another part of me, there's always this naysayer, this negative part that, well, you can't do that. You'll never do that. That's just a dream. You don't want to do that. It's not even a feeling of I'm not skilled or qualified. It's just, it's not going to happen. And I don't know why I've got that crazy naysayer. Is this something in me that's just, that always resists success almost. I resist success. That's a funny thing. And what's funny right now is, of course, if what I'm doing now, talking to you, is also going to be well reflected in the journal piece I have to write today when I get home. I'm choosing to give this more meaning than maybe is required, but it's for me. This is my counseling, my therapy. But it's almost like in a tribute to having had the opportunity to be saved and by going through this therapy, and maybe I'll get back to that another time a little more. I want to move on. Why it's taken me 40 years, I don't know, but hey, it hasn't been a bad 40 years, the intervening 40 years, and maybe now it's this full circle. Maybe that's kind of a neat thing about life. So that's what I'm going to leave you with today. Oh, one more thing. While I'm in class, we take notes. And at the bottom of my page, I always have a space for a little, if something pops up that I want to say on Dixon Janes, I'll make a note of it. And today's was to the effect of, I don't want to be told what to do. What was it? I need to feel unstructured, free, without any rules. And I think when I talked about, you know, that episode 400, oh my God, are you going to go there again? No. I've talked about wanting the feeling a need to change it up, to do something else, to make it better. And the voice today said, fuck that. It is what it is. And this is just, this is my formula. This is the way I've designed it. This is what's evolved. You get a 1 hour show and you get some music and you get me rambling and you'll get a lot of different comments about different things and sometimes political or social reflective of what's happening and sometimes a little trip down memory lane, and who knows what else we're going to toss in there. I did not tell you about what a wonderful time I had Saturday night at the Only Cafe with Brian and another character, a younger teacher who was just a riot, and then he invited a friend over. Her name was Ola. She's from Eastern Europe. And Brian misunderstood and sort of thought, oh, does that mean, is it hola, like hello or something? And that became the joke of the night. And of course, she was quite, insulted, like, no, I'm not Spanish. I'm Lithuanian or whatever she was, whatever. I can't remember. I'm sorry. No offense to any of those people. They're all different and unique. Yes, we know that. But the joke became, hola, hello. And I don't think the people living in the apartment building at 2 a.m. Sunday morning found it as funny as I did. But as she crossed the street to go back home before we got on the subway, I just kept calling out, hello, thinking it was the funniest thing. yeah, so what I'm saying is sometimes I'm still a jerk And I enjoy that part of life, too. It ain't all serious, you know. Sometimes just being a complete idiot is very refreshing. Hello! Anyway, so I'm not going to talk about what a great time we had Saturday night. The only, as we always do, and it's guaranteed every time I go there, it's going to be a great time. I did go to see Star Trek, and with all the pizzazz, and the 3D, and the neat theater, and the sound, wow. But it's just a film, so you're entertained while you're watching the film, and afterwards you leave, and boom, it's finished. Ain't nothing to take away from that one. And that's okay, but I do prefer my Dinner with Andre kind of picture when you're left chewing things over. There's some meat to chew on. Okay, that's it. Thank you, as always, for listening, and off I go to get caught up and make up for all the things I haven't done that I gotta do, and no, not gonna go there now. Take care. Bye for now.
Wake up your sleepy head, put on some clothes, shake up your bed, put another log on the fire for me. I made some breakfast and coffee. Look out my window, what do I see? A crack in the sky and a hand reaching down to me. All the nightmares came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay. What are we coming to? No room for me, no fun for you. I think about a world to come where the books were found by the golden ones, written in pain, written in all by a puzzled man who questioned what we were here for. All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here. Faces in golden rays. Don't kid yourself, they belong to you. They're the start of the coming race. The Earth's a bitch, we finished our news. Homo sapiens have outgrown their use. All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, you pretty thing.
On Becoming a Counselor, Online Journal, Week 4, Day 11. I have what may be a very peculiar take on getting through life successfully, somewhat akin to playing a game. I don't look for, but I find signs telling me I'm in the right place. It involves using my intuition for almost everything, from the mundane, like when to stop pouring cereal from the box, or how many seconds to press on the microwave, or exactly when to turn off the shower, to much bigger decisions, like signing up for this series of courses. It involves a sense of knowing what's right, a trust in one's instincts, which I've come to rely on in what seems like a very positive development. I rely on this kind of judgment when teaching, when speaking, when making plans. It is probably just the kind of wisdom that comes with age and experience. How does this relate to this class? Well, we were asked to find a picture or an audio clip to use in class tomorrow, and I had absolutely nothing in mind. But instead of treating this as something I had to do at a certain time, I simply surrendered to my path of least resistance, as I always do. In this case, it was to continue on the journey I started yesterday, looking up more information on Dr. Knobloch and his integrative psychotherapy, which eventually led me to a 2-minute, 39-second video clip of him speaking in Czech or perhaps German. I immediately realized I'd found my clip, mainly because I was going with the flow and not actively looking for it. That's the kind of thing I refer to as a sign, and it happens all the time if we tune in and allow ourselves to be receptive. Of course, one can't simply and arbitrarily adopt this strategy. It takes years and years of unconscious training. In fact, this approach to life is probably quite widespread, but explained in other ways, like, I just go with my gut feeling. Anyway, I like the clip because no one will understand him, but will have to judge his character by other means, such as body language, tone of voice. I'm sure if I preface the clip by saying he was a Nazi war criminal, perceptions and interpretations would shift radically compared to if they knew he was just the opposite and had lost his first Jewish wife in a concentration camp. Wow, what a strange paragraph.